So, officially, good morning to everyone. It is September 1st. Amazing. Where has this year gone? And this is Tuesday Live with Linda, hour one. We have 23 people on right at the moment, and it's just so really amazing to me to look around and see how we can connect like this from around the world. And we've got Switzerland, Germany, Israel. We don't have Turkey on yet. I'm hoping that Yamin can make it. And from just, of course, France, two of you from France and various parts of the United States. Heidi, I forget where you're from. I have to remember. And which Christine Kirsten is this? I so appreciate connecting with
him. I'm putting it in now. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. Great. So I don't know who it was who was asking before we began asking about the cat, but perhaps we can talk to you later because basically this is all about human, the human tea touch. And I want to first of all read you an inspiration. This is something that I wrote many years ago when I was living in Carmel. And it's called the Sun on My Back. On my morning walk, the sun warms my back, filling a lack of time in nature. When I sit in my office day after day, I feel the pull of my heartstrings and I say, a little later, and I miss another day of glory and joy in the out-of-doors. Just 10 minutes in the sun, maybe a short run, fills my being with fun. Is that too much to take, that small break? It's little to pay for a work-filled day. It's not like I shirk my duties, you know, to feel that glow, that inner knowing, just by slowing my thoughts, my steps. Think what it gets. I feel the pulse of Mother Earth as my feet tread gently upon her girth. The love that flows through the soles of my feet floods me with strength that runs so deep and awakens each time the promise I made to take time every day to stop this arcade of life games we play. I surely know there's another way of being on this earth, the chance to serve, to love, to sing, to dance in the middle of a fairy ring that I can see when I slow my steps. So take some time with nature today. Remember, it's a simple way of learning about your mission here. Just slow down and let your mind clear. Feel the pulse of the earth. Hear the songs of the birds. See the blue sky above. Touch the heart of a friend. Know we're all really one from beginning to end. And I so appreciate this feeling that we have of oneness, this connection around the planet. And Kirsten, you're calling me for some reason right now. Just one second. We must have something here. Sorry, you all. hello, Kirsten? Oh, we got a... Well, thank heaven. We have Marianne.
And put your name in chat, in location in the chat while she's doing that.
You won't believe it. Kirsten's internet just went down. Good that I answered the phone. Thank heaven you're here, Marianne.
No problem. That's what I'm here for.
Beautiful. So I would just like, first of all, as I woke up this morning, I usually, on these days, I wake up around 5 and I just start lying there and thinking of the ways I can appreciate my body. And I'd like to invite us just to take our, I always start with my right hand because my left hand isn't quite as mobile yet, but I would like us to start with our left hand just to be different and just outline the edges of this body that contain all these cells, each one with a divine spark running this show. And let's just go down our body and just say, ah, feel the outline of this vessel that contains my soul. Just go down the left side. And down with the right hand down, now the other side. And just imagine all the way down, just connecting. And then let's put one hand over the other on our heart chakra. And imagine your hand cupped, filled with your heart, and giving your heart back, your love back to yourself, to every cell in your body. Let's just pour love into this vessel for our soul. Let's just, and imagine each, I'd like each of you to imagine a color that you'd like to give to your body today. Ah, just in this 1 1/4 circles. And a smile to activate that beautiful feel-good hormone, the serotonin. And know that each time we gently, we softly move their skin, our tissue, that we're activating that hormone, the oxytocin, that trust hormone. And through my cells, through my connection with my cells, through that divine spark in every one of my cells, I send this love out to each one of you. And I send that, and I invite each of us to send it around the world. Ah, with gratitude to all of Mother Nature, to the Mother Earth, to all of your animals, and I to all the birds I can hear around me. And let's send this to our families and our friends, this feeling of gratitude. And just look at the faces here. And it's such a treasure for me to be with you all. And I can see and imagine behind some of you, and I actually see with Ruby, her beautiful picture of her beautiful dog. And for all of you who have animals at home, we send this love to them and for what they bring to our lives. And I'd like to begin by reading you part of the first chapter of the book that it's got to be out to you in English. It's in its second printing in German. It's now edited. And when I, this is the first chapter, and the way this book was written, for 2 weeks, I spent all day, every day with Sybil Taylor. And we first started in New Mexico, and I would dictate, and she just recorded day after day. And then we decided it was too cold in New Mexico, so we jumped on a plane and we flew to California, and we drove up the California coast, and we kept writing, dictating for 2 weeks. And this is the book that came out of it 1.5 years later. And it still isn't published in English. And it's written in such a beautiful way. And this is the first chapter. It's T-Touch. I don't know. I think the title is going to be something like A Gift of Touch in Your Hand. T-Touch in Your Hand. A Gift from the Animals. And this first is the magic of touch, and that's actually any touch. And this is a statement from Diane Ackerman from the book A Natural History of the Senses. Despite the fact that we're territorial creatures who move through the world like small principalities, contact warms us, even without our knowing it. It probably reminds us of that time long before deadlines and banks when our mothers cradled us and we were enthralled and felt perfectly lovable. Even touch, subtle as to be overlooked, doesn't go unnoticed by the subterranean mind. A kind hand on a fevered brow, the deep contentment of being lovingly held, the startling surprise of a hot surface, the woolly comfort of a warm blanket. Long before we babble our first baby talk words, we are familiar with touch, that eloquent and universal language common to all life on our planet. In fact, as we lie cradled in the womb, touch is the first sense we experience, our first awareness of being. And it is also the last one to go, fading only with our last breath. Scientists speculate that touch lies at the very heart of the beginning of life itself, in that magical moment when primordial chemicals first make contact with each other to form new bonds. Michelangelo, the great Renaissance artist, expressed the same understanding in a different way, a spiritual one. In his magnificent creation painting on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, he pictured life's first moment as God reaching out a hand to bring Adam to life with the spark of his touch. Even our spoken language places touch at the heart of our consciousness, seeing it as a bridge between the physical and emotional. We speak of being touched, of being in or out of touch, of keeping in touch, of touchstones and the common touch. We refer to an unstable situation as touch and go, and describe our emotions as feelings. You can probably think of many other examples yourself. When I first began learning about touch, I was amazed at how central it is to all of life's activities, the connecting thread that makes up the web of life. For instance, even as I write these words, just by widening my awareness a little, I become conscious of the subtle touch of the air flowing through my nostrils with each breath. And just feel that. Of the pressure of the computer keys against my fingertips, of the cool breeze fanning my skin, which is really beautiful right here. Even the delightful warble of the birds singing outside my open window comes to me through the touch of sound waves vibrating the membranes and tiny bones within my ear. In physical terms, touch is composed of five experiences: contact, pressure, pain, heat and cold, relayed to the brain via a marvelous intranet of specific neurological receptors and sensors. Miraculously, there are as many as 5 million touch receptors in our skin, 3,000 in a single fingertip. Some parts of our bodies are more sensitive to touch than others. Some parts are specialists, responding to particular stimuli. The lips, tongue, and fingertips are more sensitive than the back. Tickling the soles of our feet can trigger fits of irresistible laughter. The pressure of an ice cube against the wrist can lower body temperatures on a sweltering summer day. Touch is how we locate ourselves in space, how we sense ourselves in our world in as dimensional. It gives us our body image, awakening us to the shape we are in. While our personal experience of touch helps to form our sense of ourselves and of the physical world around us, we are also powerfully affected by cultural and societal attitudes toward touch. Why, when, and how is it acceptable to touch one another varies from country to country, from tradition to tradition, and profoundly influences our well-being and the ways we communicate. This is just the beginning of this chapter. This goes on for another 5, 6, 7 pages on touch. And the whole book is written in this way. It's really, I'm very excited to get this out, because when we went over, now this is written, I think, in 2008, and when we went over carefully, like, the description of each of the touches is in here. It's a practical guide and an inspirational guide to all levels of our, you know, society. Maybe next week I'll read you the chapter on lover to lover. I think you would enjoy that. The fact is that now we're in a situation where we can't touch each other. And this is where T-Touch can give us our sense of ourselves in another way. And this concept of cellular wisdom, that when we apply these specific 1 1/4 spiral T-touches, something else happens. And I was hoping, Pam Beetz, that you would come on, because I would love it if we would just have a little discussion of just that we spoke on the phone a couple of days ago. And for those of you who don't know Pam Beetz, actually, Pam, I'll have you answer yourself, because I don't remember what year you started with T-touch. But after that, Pam became a Feldenkrais practitioner, and it's thanks to a 2-hour lecture that she gave at the University of Colorado in about 1997 that Cecilia Wendler, who was there getting credits for nurses at the university, took T-Touch back and was able to stop the flailing limbs in the middle of a surgery. I can't remember if it was open heart surgery, but it was something like that. And it was thanks to 15 minutes of T-Touch lecture that Pam gave. She gave Pam, as I understood it, an hour and 45 minutes of Feldenkrais and 15 minutes of T-Touch. And it's thanks to that that we have her, Cecilia's PhD. So now I'll stop talking. I just want to interview you, because Pam and I had a really interesting discussion.
We did.
Do you remember your question? Do you remember what led up to it with the heart hug?
Yes, because I was talking about, I had been teaching a Feldenkrais Awareness Through Movement class. And one person, we sat up to kind of check in for a moment. One person just burst into tears. And at that point, I said, well, let's do a heart hug. And she realized something very personal after doing that heart hug that was really connected with the lesson and connected with the heart hug, kind of connecting with her own feeling with herself. And I said, Linda, it's so amazing, you know, and then I forget why it actually works, you know, because I get so excited about how it works, you know, and what it does for people that you don't even, you can't even guess what will happen for them.
Yes. And
Is that what we were talking about?
Yes, that's it. And the fact that made such a difference to her. But the fact is, then the question is, oh, it's so amazing that it works. And the fact is, it's really worthwhile knowing, wait a minute, and as I understood, she was in a bit of a sense of fear and panic from something that came up for her, correct?
And pain, yes, yes.
And pain also?
Yes.
Is that what you said? And yes. So when you... what we have discovered from the studies that we did with Robin Bernheit checking brainwaves, we found that when you apply this 1 1/4 circles, that when you're in a state of fear, the limbic system, the sympathetic nervous system, fight, flight, fear, freeze, fool around, that is in control. And what we discovered is, when we make this and just do it, this for yourselves. And let's as we're doing this, send this around the planet, because we've got quite a few people. We've only been doing this for a couple of months, and this movement of the tissue, that movement brings us from the state of fear that she was in, and the connection with the sympathetic, the control of the sympathetic nervous system, to the parasympathetic, this rest and recovery, and activates the forebrain so that we have choices. And I mean, it fits so perfectly with the Feldenkrais work, because of course that was Moshe's concept, is that we would have choices in our lives. And that's what this simple 1 1/4 spiral does. And it's this, beyond that, it is this connection to the cellular wisdom, this divine spark. And anytime somebody says, well, what are you talking about? My question to that person is, so how do you explain that you can breathe? How do you speak? How do you see? What's the answer? And it's so interesting, because it's the creative energies of the universe. You know, in the little book, Uncommon Prayer, by Ruth Miller, there's this statement that in between the stuff that makes up the universe, in between all of this, stuff is anything we can see, is not just empty space. Holding it all together is a wonderful, rich quantum field, out of which emerges all matter, that's everything we can see, and all energy. Many scientists call this quantum field consciousness or intelligence. And the rest of the world calls this God or Allah or divine spirit, or the creator of all it is. And what I find, what we have found, discovered, is that, wait a minute, this spiral, 1 1/4 spiral movement of the tissue is like a connector to this cellular wisdom. And I keep coming back to these books. Now, this book, page 14, energy waves that allow for communication and interconnection make up the expansive dimension of cellular wisdom. Energy waves that allow communication and interconnection. And this is kind of what we've got here, isn't it? And the reason for understanding it, as Pam said, when we first started this, when she started the training, do you remember, Pam, what year you began?
The Feldenkrais or T-Touch?
Horse training, T-Touch, Tellington training. What
year did the Equus article come out? 1981?
I think it was 83 or 4.
Okay, I think it might have been 83 then. Because yeah. I think it took me about a year or two to track you down. And so I think it was around 84, 85.
Yep.
With my first clinic at Joder Ranch.
Yep. That's when we just started doing these long trainings. They were 7 or 8 day trainings in with horses. And yes, we just knew that this stuff worked. And Valentina asked me to read some of these. I want to read just a couple of things from this collection here. And this is what we have printed out on my computer. I have hundreds and hundreds of cases, but they're in German. And this is this book full. And I just, you know, at random picked a few. Like this, for instance, is improving circulation after finger amputation. And the reason Valentina said, you have to read some of these, because, you know, we're here and you learn the T-touches, and we're going to talk about some of the names and what part of the fingers we use that represent those names, and when we use those. So This is 2 years after a finger was amputated. A woman uses T-Touch on her own hand to improve circulation and sensation. This is written by Judy Schwenk. This is 2001. And I attended the first day of we call them then the T-Team Clinic, the Tellington Clinic, and having an hour's drive home, decided to try some circles on my own hand. 2.5 years ago, the end of my finger was amputated by a sliding stall door. After the initial healing, the finger was cold and white and extremely sensitive. It had been sewn back on. Because it was sensitive, I tended to leave it alone, not shake hands with people. After 2 days of doing tiny circles all over my finger, it was less sensitive. The finger was pink and warm. T-Touch works. And Debbie, you remember that at one of your clinics where you first brought your horse, where we had that woman sitting there as an observer, and she had the same situation. Her little finger had been sewn back on, and just sitting there doing some simple T-touches on it as she was watching all these horses being worked. One of them was Debbie's 2-year-old, who was thought never to be normal again or ever. Her finger turned also pink, and it was part of her again. Holy mackerel, you all. I mean, you know, these are miracles. These are miracles. And all of us who've been involved in this for so many years, we've seen these miracles. We need to keep recognizing them and acknowledging them and talking about them and knowing that, but now we can understand the amazing brilliance of the body when we acknowledge this cellular intelligence that I've been talking about for years and years and never understood. What is this? And we're just getting it intuitively. What do you mean, cellular intelligence? But now we know. So, and Pam, how has it changed for you? Because we've been doing this stuff for many years. Do you have any other feeling about the T-Touch, or is it so much a part of you now that I'm not sure how it is for those of you who've been doing this for years and years?
Well, I would say it's changed a lot and not at all in a way. You know, when I started, we had touches 1, 2, 3 and leading positions 1, 2, 3. And I do have to interject, I loved and I still love this, even from that very first clinic. And it was team then, Tellington Touch Every Animal Method. You really encouraged us to go try it on anything. And I did. I mean, the number of creatures that I've been able to touch was astonishing. And I think with that, you know, there's always been this sense of gentle exploration and respect and intuition that has always stayed the same. And this kind of goes around a little bit, but you know, so many in these Zoom classes like this and the ones with Robin and Mandy and you, we've been talking about the appreciation of the animals, and that's always been there. And I think for me, when I first read the artist Equus article, I knew right away that I was connected to this. So that's all stayed the same. There certainly have been some frustrating moments of trying to expand on 1, 1.5, 1 3/4, touch number 2B, you know, and then animal names, because it got a lot more complicated. But when you distill it down, it's still the same thing. So, you know, so you don't have to worry about it. It's the circle and the quarter.
Yes, and for all of you who are in here now, some of you just a few times even, what makes it possible to learn this work is the fact that we have the 9 elements, and it's logical how we do the various touches, the pressure, the tempo, the pauses, the breathing, the connection between the touches, our intention, and our paying attention to feedback, how we feel and how our animals feel, for those of you, many here who also work with animals. And I'm just wondering, Pam, for you, because when did you do your Feldenkrais training?
I started in 1987 and I finished in 1991.
And so who did you work with?
Dennis Leary, Elizabeth Berenger, David Bearson.
Oh, cool.
Not Pamiel.
All of the people from the training that I was in.
All the original people. Yeah.
Right. And so we, because we have a lot of Feldenkrais practitioners here. And so how do you find that you, where do you use, find T-Touch helpful for your Feldenkrais practice? Because that's what we want to give those of you who are practitioners of Feldenkrais.
Something. You know, it's so seamless. You know, even when I started my Feldenkrais training, for me, it integrated so easily. And I know they're different, but they're not different. And for me, I don't know how to explain it. There's just not a lot of difference. I take that back. I think when I do Feldenkrais, it's oriented more how I do T-Touch. And I think that's true since I really started doing Feldenkrais as a living. I think there's something about how you touch somebody with T-Touch. And it's not different from Feldenkrais, but for me, there's just a connection or a profoundness that it doesn't make a difference. I mean, I might be making a circle. I might be lifting someone's arm and I'll, instead of thinking of it as range of motion, I think of it as a circle and a quarter. Or I'll feel something in their body and I'll add a Python lift or, you know, something else that, you know, it just kind of flows from one place to another. I don't know if that's a good answer.
Well, it's your answer. The thing is that for me, that was such a pleasure to be able to share with an amazing summit in May, to share with those of you who are Feldenkrais practitioners, what Eleanor found is that it's something that she could give to her clients to take home with them, or that she can even do over the phone. And it was interesting, Yael, I really need to go back and print out your words, because it was so interesting, your description of, the difference of feeling. And one of the things I've been wanting to share with you, boy, I wish I had a video of it. I have a friend in Germany who's, I don't know what age she is. She's in her later 70s. She's tall and very elegant, and she has really, really bad hips, and she's very much not wanting to do surgery. And I'm not sure what's behind that, but she was in such pain she couldn't walk downstairs, and they have a huge house and a lot of stone stairs, and she had to back down. She couldn't walk down front. And so I asked her if she wanted a T-Touch session. And all I did with her, I put her on a sheet on the massage table, and I just started lifting at her shoulders, lifting the sheet and putting it down. And then this taking hold of it about 4 or 5 inches farther down, lifting around. I went all around her body like this, and then I just did the T-touches starting the same way, just outlining her body with the pauses, like a 2-second circle and a pause, and then a move about 4 or 5 inches. I went all around her body, and really paying attention to my breathing, really paying attention not to the pain she was in, because she was in really deep pain. With every lift and every T-touch that I gave, it's like, just feel the wonder of your body. It's this wow factor, this place that I go to. And something happened when she got up. She could walk down the stairs normally without pain. All I did was pour the wonder into each touch. And I that's such a profound thing, because I wasn't working on her hips. It was the whole thing. And this is why, Valentina, I think that you said you've got to read some more of these, what can happen, like just hearing that case. And that lasted, we stayed with them about a week. We go there, have been going there at least once a year and staying with these friends for a week. And the whole week she could go downstairs normally. Doesn't mean that at some point she shouldn't be looking at a hip replacement. But it sure made a difference.
Hey, Linda?
Yes.
Do you want a couple? Now that you talk, I can think of some more concrete examples. Do you want them, or would you rather go on?
No, just give another example, Pam, and then I'm going to invite others.
Okay. You know, that really reminded me. I see a
lot. No, actually, sorry. We have to say Pam Beetz, because otherwise we don't know who's speaking, because this is being transcribed.
Okay, this is Pam Beetz in Denver, Colorado. I have a tendency in my Feldenkrais practice to see a lot of people who've had horrific injuries. I mean, like someone broke their neck riding in the hunt. I see people with Parkinson's. One person broke almost every bone in her body in a plane crash. You know, lots of surgeries. I see a lot of people who don't know what else to do because they had knee surgery and their knees don't bend 5 years later. And that's where I find T-Touch the most helpful, because they're already frightened. They don't believe anything is going to help them. And just by doing a little T-Touch, and they get some relief, and they get a little bit of movement. It's more than getting movement. It's kind of that sense of getting themselves back makes a huge difference. Some of the people I see with Parkinson's, you know, there's this idea in Feldenkrais that you kind of outline yourself, this, you know, sensing a little bit what you've been talking about. And I do that with T-Touch. I start at their head and I just do circles all the way down their body and around the outside of their shape. And it's remarkable how they feel. So that's why, to me, it seems seamless. I could hardly think of what I did.
Well, think of this, but what you said is that when a person is in horrific pain, the only way to escape the pain is to get out of the body. And the fact is that with T-Touch, we're able to bring them into the body with reduced pain, or in many, many cases, the pain is gone. And the only way I can describe that is because we have focused on the beauty, on the perfection, on the function, this function, this brilliance of the cells. It's not just function, it's brilliance. Every cell. To think that every cell has all the parts of the entire body, the immune system, all of these parts. Like, we need to get into these miracles. When we recognize that, we are walking miracles. And we give gratitude for that. That can really help to overcome the fear and the pain. It's really simple, actually. Not necessarily easy, because to believe that it can be that like that, interesting. Thank you, Pam. Comments, thoughts? Valentina.
Go over here and unmute. I was thinking about what had become different for me in your work. When you asked that before. And for me, there were two things. One is, I think your work became different for me when you became different yourself, you. When I had started with your work around 1990 or 91, but only ever from books and videos, only. And it didn't become magical for me. It was wonderful. It was effective. It was another technique that I had put in my toolbox that I would flow into using For those of us who are in practice, you study a lot of things and you get a bigger and bigger toolbox. And then ideally, you stop thinking and you just, as Pam was kind of saying, between Feldenkrais and T-Touch, flow back and forth in a treatment. What comes into your hands is what is necessary at the time. And that was already happening for me with your work. But it wasn't until I met you and experienced your heart in person almost a year ago, when you had the first class I ever had with you that you taught where I was there was at Happy Dog Ranch in Denver.
All right.
Last Labor Day weekend, a year ago. And then, because of who you had become, as you that I experienced differently from the you in the videos, the work changed and became magical and expanded to be the truth of the universe. And now, every time I use T-Touch, which is all the time, I get to re-experience that wow factor, because that has floated to the surface and become the primary message and practice of the work for me. And that's what has changed, is it changed from being a wonderful technique and a fabulous skill and something to share into something that informs my life at almost every minute. I can't, words are too small to express my gratitude for the gift you give. With how you talk about cellular wisdom now, with the gigantic concepts that you share with us and bring to us in a very real way because of the touch. And that's the big difference for me, is that it is not telling to touch technique. It's a philosophy of existence that you can use every day. So thank you.
Thank you. And I mean, it's it is about the wow factor. You know, I really appreciated it before, but I didn't have, it was the merging of science and spirituality, the merging of quantum science and thanks to, Lynn McTaggart's book, The Intention Experiment, and the first one, The Field, talking about the difference of our reality when we understand that everything is right here. You know, that we begin, each one of us in our own way, depending upon what we've read or heard or take into our own bodies. And that embodies the T-Touch. And it's so hard to believe that just like moving in this 1 1/4 circles, holding that infinite possibility to connect with the brilliance of the cells, that healing potential that our bodies carry. Our bodies know how, and we just, it's like this spiral connector to activate that interconnection between the cells, as Eleanor talked about when she had, when she couldn't breathe with the virus.
With the light. And,
you know, it's like a light lighting up the cells, connecting the cells, what Bruce Lipton talks about so much, that interconnection between the cells.
Well, it just, when you make cellular that understanding, that wow factor, every day and everyday life becomes limitless.
Yes. Yep.
You see the potential for, I call it magic, you see the potential for magic everywhere. And you no longer look at oh, this is wrong, or this is sick, or this is broken, or this is this. You see every opportunity to turn the lights back on.
Yep. Literally, the lights in the cells, to activate yeah. that light in the cells.
Yeah.
So, yes. So for me, I think of it as magic and miracles, and it's in everything. And just by choosing to see that, we can see the pain. That's easy. We're in the human body, man. It's really easy to go there. And it's another choice to look at it and experience the magic. And when I just connect with that divine spark, that creation, that creative spark in us, it's like the miracle is awakened. And I'd like to read to you, because not all of you have heard it, but every time I hear it, it does something to me. But this was, I'm going to put that book down. I wanted to read you something about arthritis, which is really interesting. But this Hindu legend on the back of this book, that took this neuroscientist professor at the at Tufts University of Medicine teaching there, took her away from teaching at the university, and she became a life coach, this Joan C. King, in this book, The Code of Authentic Living Cellular Wisdom. And on the back, I just want to remind you of this, because the thing that I love so much about it, when I read this, I thought, okay, it's a hit. Well, first I'll read it and then I'll tell you what I was thinking. So here is one legend of how wisdom came to be hidden from all humans. Upon rubbing up against the legend, Joan C. King asked herself, what if in all my academic studies of cells, I've missed the deeper truth of what I'm really seeking? It was that question that led Joan beyond the academic search for the wisdom embedded in our very cells to the discovery of cellular wisdom and the journey within. According to an old Hindu legend, there was once upon a time when all human beings were gods, but they had so abused their divinity that Brahma, the chief god, decided to take it away from them and hide it where it could never be found. Where to hide their divinity was the question. So Brahma called a council of the gods to help him decide. Let's bury it deep in the earth, said the gods. But Brahma answered, no, that will not do, because humans will dig into the earth and they'll find it. Then the god said, well, let's sink it in the deepest ocean. But Brahma said, no, not there. For they will learn to dive into the ocean and they will find it. And then the gods said, let's take it to the top of the highest mountain and hide it there. But once again, Brahma replied, no, they will not do, that will not do either, because they will eventually climb every mountain and once again take up their divinity. Then the gods gave up and they said, we do not know where to hide it, because it seems that there is no place on earth or in the sea that human beings will not eventually reach. Brahma thought for a long time and then he said, here's what we will do. We will hide their divinity deep in the center of their own being, for humans will never think to look for it there. All the gods agreed that that was a perfect hiding place, and the deed was done. And since that time, humans have been going up and down the earth, digging, diving, climbing, and exploring, searching for something already within. And I was thinking about this and I thought, okay, this was great for Joan King, but there are going to be lots of people who they can't relate to a Hindu legend. And so I call Sage Lewis, and her husband, James, is a scholar of the Bible. His father was a minister. And I said, James, I know there's something in the Bible that talks about that. And so he gave me, in the King James Version, in Luke 17, lines 20 and 21, I'm going to read it exactly to you. Because for some, that's really important. Hold on. King James Version, Luke 17, 20 and 21. The kingdom of God is within you and all around you. And for me, just looking at all around, and because I'm looking out my window, I look up the mountain here, and we're on the second floor, and we have two floors in our house. Our main room downstairs, when if we can ever travel again, that's a really big entertaining room that the person who built this house did for entertaining. And that's where we can have like 25 students in that main living room downstairs. But this is our upstairs. And I look out this way and I see the ocean. And the house is completely open. Like, we don't have air conditioning and we don't have heat. And I look this way and I can see across the street. I see to a tree on the golf course where we used to be able to walk our dog Rainy. And I see and I feel myself. I feel myself in those trees and the flowers and the ocean and the water. And I feel that oneness of all of us. And that, and that we have in this simple, you know, 1 1/4 circle, that's our connector to go inside and awaken that, wow, that brilliance. And it's support the healing potential in our bodies. That's our beauty. So, Kirsten, you're going to be very proud of me. It's 8:55. We want to take a 10-minute break. We're trying to give you, like, stand up, get a drink, you know, get a little nibble of something. And then we're going to come back and get into the work.